Our beloved Ellicott City suffered its second flood this summer. But despite the crisis, once again, Howard County residents and authorities came together to show the strength and goodness that is a characteristic of all residents in Howard County.
Of course, limited information at the beginning in terms of the impact and the scope, but our very first step in that was opening up the food bank. And I think Paul can speak to this a little bit more, but within the first 4 hours on that Memorial Day that our food bank was open, I believe we saw more than 80,000 pounds of donated supplies from the public.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really crazy, the amount of giving.
If getting in shape is part of your summer to-do list, check out Boot Camp at the Park, a program that wants to change this summer goal into a lifestyle for you.
I started to realize that it's about community. Mm-hmm. This is all these things sort of play into why we created We Promote Health and what We Promote Health is. But I realized I really couldn't do it on my own. I started to realize that we could build a community, use the boot camp as a forum, and have it be something where it's not about the intensity, but about the effort, so that anyone at any fitness level, any age could do it,
mm-hmm.
but bring in resources, other individuals that bring in their talent, so we can incorporate healthy eating, proper sleep, stress reduction, you know, all those other elements that really,
yeah.
And so we started to build the sort of the model for We Promote Health.
And the food we eat most certainly has a huge effect on our health. And one Hoka resident understood that principle and decided to make changes that would benefit his family and our community at large.
So the reason we started Mary's Land Farm was we were looking for better food for our own children. We were stuck in the situation where we have 7 children, and some of our children were having different health problems, including problems with things like attention deficit disorder. And we started learning more and more how food affects your behavior and how food affects your health. At the same time, it was hard to necessarily understand the labeling on a lot of food products, even organic food products. And people told us that you really had to start with a local farmer, because if you have a local farmer, you can talk to him about what's in his food product.
These stories coming up in today's Hoka Journal, starting right now. Hi, and welcome to Hoka Journal, the show where we highlight the unique and interesting people, businesses, and events happening right here in Howard County. I am your host, Cris Oviedo. Ellicott City is a town rich of history, culture, and life. And it's very, very heart-wrenching to see the images of flooding waters just taking over the town, destroying everything on their way. I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch the videos on Facebook both times, but it's I can't even imagine the force, the power of water just coming in, and the feeling of uncertainty and frustration of not being able to do anything, just watching that. Unfortunately, we've gotten to experience this twice in the last couple of years. But I have to say, with this really bad situations, there's a lot of hope and a lot of good that has come along as well. And the way that residents and authorities have reacted both times here in Howard County is honestly something that I admire. And, you know, talking about that and to really highlight some of that and some of the ongoing efforts, I have here in studio with me today Jennifer Grebe, and she's the Director of Resource Development at the Community Action Council. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having us.
And I also have Paul McKeldry, and he is the food bank director.
That's correct. Thanks.
Am I butchering your names?
You are,
please,
but
please
I've had
me.
It's actually Paul McKeldry. It's how we knew telemarketers as kids.
It's true. It's true. There's a name that you go by, and then when they call you by something else, or they may say it a little bit weird, you know, what are you going to sell me now, right? I'm not selling anything today. We're actually here to talk about the efforts of going around Ellicott City after the very unfortunate second flood. It happened, I mean, just what, over
2.5 years ago?
Yeah.
It's really unbelievable.
So why don't we just dive right into it, and you guys tell me a little bit about what happened after that evening when we all saw the videos and we all got the news of the flood in Ellicott City. Can you just take us back to what that meant for you guys after, you know, after the news broke to everybody.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that I find really incredible about the people that I work with at Community Action Council and our volunteers is that our response was really almost instantaneous. Personally, on a Sunday evening, I had a house full of people. And when I finally checked my phone, I had text messages from everyone within the Community Action Council on, here's what's happening. Did you see that there's flooding? What are our next steps? And so Paul, our food bank director, took it upon himself on the next day, which was Memorial Day, a holiday, to make sure that our food bank was open. It was supposed to be closed for the holiday. So he came in, opened it up, got a group of volunteers, and I think a handful of staff members who assisted, and made sure that our food bank was open in order to take donations. I mean, we knew that our response had to be immediate. And there was, of course, limited information at the beginning in terms of the impact and the scope. But our very first step in that was opening up the food bank. And I think Paul can speak to this a little bit more, but within the first 4 hours on that Memorial Day that our food bank was open, I believe we saw more than 80,000 pounds of donated supplies from the public.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really crazy, the amount of giving and effort that the entire community came together with. I remember I was downtown Baltimore, actually in the middle of it, you know, in an Uber. We had to pull over. We were just sitting somewhere, and my boss called me and said, "Hey, do you mind going in tomorrow? We're going to collect water. We're going to collect cleaning supplies." She was already in touch with, and I didn't even know Ellicott City had flooded at this point. So it was literally instantaneous. Said, "Of course, I'll go in." 4 hours. My warehouse manager, Josh Spiegel, came in. And we, with a group of 6 volunteers, which swelled to about 8, we took in 82,000 pounds of supplies, be it water, be it cleaning supplies, layers of bleach, mops, cleaning buckets, everything that you can imagine people were dropping off. And
within a 4-hour period.
Within a 4-hour period. To give you just kind of, you know, we typically take in 65,000 pounds in a month. We did 80,000 pounds in 4 hours.
Wow.
And that's just shows the dedication of the community that came together literally almost instantaneous.
So is this different from the first flood? Like, did you guys see that on the first time around as well? Like, people just swarming in to help? And not only that, but how do you guys handle that? Because like you just said, I mean, you get less than what you got in 4 hours in 1 month. Here, you're getting a month's worth of donations in a span of 4 hours in a day that you were supposed to be closed, right?
Right.
So with, I'm assuming, limited staff, limited, you know, manpower.
Lots of partners in the community also came through. Giant was actually bringing a truck around to donate 4 pallets of water to us. And we actually talked them into taking some pallets of water and storing them for us. Wegmans was another big partner in which they took 9 pallets of water for us. They actually ran a truck, came over and helped us out. We just were out of room and out of space to even take anything else. And I was getting worried about, I got to start turning people away until, you know, our retail partners came through and really helped us out.
Yeah, I think I would add that our experience in the 2016 flood helped us to know what needed to happen and what needed to be done. So it gave us, unfortunately, it gave us the experience to be able to run things very smoothly in responding to the crisis. And so we knew that the response had to be instantaneous. We knew that our food bank needed to be open, and we knew that we had an immediate need to collect and then distribute supplies. And we have a little more than 100 employees. We serve more than 35,000 people every year. And I think that in some ways, we're one of the few nonprofits based in Howard County that has the capacity to respond to a crisis of this size. And Paul was right. We also had an amazing generosity from community partners who very quickly, when our food bank was full, donated supplies, gave us auxiliary space to be able to store those items until then we could go through and kind of take stock of the inventory and then redistribute.
So tell us a little more about that distribution process, because it's hard to imagine and it's hard, I think, to understand. Yes, we are here in the community, but for those of us who are not really affected by this, right? Not personally affected by this. We did not lose anything. We have our homes that fare well, you know, with all the storms and everything. I think it's hard to understand how the distribution process works. What are you guys looking for? How are you guys doing this? Like, how is that getting to the people who really need the supplies?
Well, I think St. Peter's Church has really been key in that fact. They're right at the top of Main Street, and they were serving as the center for people to actually come and pick up. So we're collecting and storing, and then we're kind of feeding them as they need it. So they kind of tell us, and that's the biggest thing that, you know, I notice with them, you know, the needs change daily. So if they suddenly need trash bags or trash cans, we have those, we take them over. Next day it's headlamps. You know, as the changes occur and changes go forth in the needs, we kind of react and take those, as we sorted through our donations, we take those specific things over.
Yeah, as Paul said, we really worked with not only the partners on the ground, like St. Peter's Church, that geographically was located right where everything happened, but we also worked with Howard County government to determine what it was that was needed. And immediately after the flood happened and we were looking at this crisis response, Howard County opened up a disaster assistance center at the 50 Plus Center on Frederick Road. So initially our staff was there distributing emergency bags, water, and cleaning supplies. And then I think in a very short amount of time after that, St. Peter's became an established distribution center. The county had identified something like 1,500 individuals, either business owners whose businesses were destroyed on Main Street, residents, or those who were previously employed on Main Street, as the total number of impacted people. So we knew the volume and the scope in that sense of what we were working with. And then we used both the 50 Plus Center and St. Peter's Church to distribute the supplies that we had. In addition to that, our food bank is open to those who were impacted by the flooding, just as it is for any other individual that needs food assistance. And so we did see many, many victims of the flooding crisis come directly to our food bank to receive food.
And speaking, you know, let's look at the other side. We've talked about how you guys are doing it, how you guys are distributing, and how you guys are even locating those people who actually need the services, right, and the donations. But let's talk about those of us on the other side, those of us who want to get involved, those of us who want to help and contribute in any way that's possible, right? Where do we go? What are you guys looking for? I mean, what's the plan of action that we should be following? Because I know there's a tendency as humans that we all want to just go to the place where it all happened and pitch in, right? And start helping. But as we've learned, I think, throughout the years, just by looking at other tragedies that have happened, not only here, you know, in the United States, but outside, you have to have preparation, you know, physically, be ready physically and mentally to be able to really help and not hinder the efforts. So can we just tell, you know, the listeners right now, what's the best way to get involved? What's the best way to help, you know, but whether it be donations, whether it be actually, you know, hands-on type of help, what should we be looking for? What should we do? What can we do?
That's a really great question. And I think that, as Paul has mentioned earlier, that the need is changing. And so initially, those supplies were needed upfront immediately. And as we're working with St. Peter's Church, we know from the people that are on the ground that they've received enough supplies at this point in time. I, of course, don't know the full scope and the plan of everything moving forward, but I feel as though we could probably say that the first phase of the recovery has ended and we're moving into a different phase. So we're still obviously dealing with the crisis, but that immediate need for supplies is done. And now we're looking at things that are more long term. So if the community wants to get involved, there's a number of ways that they can do that directly with the Community Action Council. Our primary response at this point is going to be food assistance. Although when we're looking long term, particularly at those individuals who have lost their income, I'm sure that there's a number of other ways that they're going to need support from our program. But for those looking to get involved, we have volunteer efforts at our food bank to help us go through everything that's been donated and organize it. I also know that Howard County government is looking for volunteers and that there's a page up on the government site kind of directing all those overall efforts. I would encourage listeners to check out Community Action Council of Howard County on Facebook or on Twitter, where we're regularly providing those updates and posting any new needs we have and any new volunteer opportunities that there are.
That's great. And if somebody who was affected is still in need of help and maybe they have not been able to figure out exactly where to go, because I mean, this is mentally draining, this is mentally challenging, and I know I can't even imagine what I would do. You know, I don't think just figuring out how to schedule a simple doctor appointment sometimes can be a challenge, right? I can't even imagine trying to encounter something as major as this that just alters your life completely. So if somebody's listening and they still haven't, you know, they're still trying to figure out, you know, what they need to do and they were affected by this flood, what should they be doing? Where should they be calling? You know, what's out there for them help-wise?
I'm so glad that you asked that question. And it's actually one of the things that really struck me last week was speaking with a woman who in the flooding lost her home, her business, and her vehicle. And she is a single mom of four children under the age of six. And so when you're looking at people that are touched, I mean, that's the family that's going to need help for a long time, and they're going to need help in a lot of different ways. And so if there is anybody out there who's listening that is in need of assistance, Community Action Council is there to help. You can check out our website, which is cac-hc.org. You can also visit our food bank, which is at 9385 Gerwig Lane. We're at the food bank between the hours of
1 and 4, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays. Wednesday nights and even Saturday mornings, we have appointments. So come on by, show us your credentials. No issues.
And
we're here to help.
One of the things that I think is important about Community Action Council and our response to this is that we provide a range of programs to those who need it. So our food bank is one, energy assistance, housing assistance, and early childhood education are other programs. We actually serve a little more than 35,000 people in Howard County every year. So we have a range of services, but if there's something that an individual needs that's not necessarily a program that we administer, we're well connected in the community and we work very hard to connect families with the resources that they need. It's a focus within our organization. At our food bank, for example, we have staff that routinely sit in the offices there to make sure that they're cross-connecting our clients with other programs. So someone may come in with an immediate need for food, but we always make sure that we have staff there to say, how are your kids doing? Are you able to pay your mortgage? What's going on with your rent? And then making sure that they're connected to the other programs that we have. So we are really here as a community resource, and if it's not something that we can administer, we will work to connect people to those that can help.
I am really glad that you mentioned that it's not just that the Community Action Council is not just a emergency effort, right? That is not something that just came up overnight to help those in need. That it's an established program that's there and that has a lot of different resources already in place. So if somebody was affected by this, or you know, even somebody who's listening and was not affected by the flood, but it's struggling with other issues, they can also contact you guys, because it's, like I said, it's not just there to help out. Right now, obviously, your efforts are center, I would think, around helping those in Ellicott City who were affected in the Ellicott City flood. But you guys are much more comprehensive and you guys have a lot more services than just that. So I'm glad that you brought that up. And I'm also glad to hear, because I think there's some kind of stigma and there's some kind of myth about who can access the services provided by, you know, organizations such as the Community Action Council. So I would like for you guys to please help us debunk that myth, you know, just help us get rid of this stigma that there's out there that says that it's only there for some people. Can you tell our listeners who your services are for?
That is such an amazing question, and I'm really glad that you brought that up. So I think when people think about Howard County, they know that it's a county of affluence. What they may not realize is that the reality is that 22% of people that live in Howard County struggle to make ends meet. In some ways, those are classified as what some may call the working poor, but there are people that are working, it's an expensive county to live in, that are just really struggling day in and day out to make ends meet. And so who do we serve? We serve anyone who needs it. A lot of our programming is directed to assist those who are at 150% of the poverty line and below. But we will not turn anybody away who's in crisis. I mean, if there's someone that needs our assistance and we can't provide it, we're going to direct them to the resources that can. And so, you know, one thing that's interesting, for example, Paul and I were talking recently about our food bank. And in the last, I think over the last year, we saw something like a 229% increase in visits of senior citizens to our food bank. And so you may have an idea of your mind of who it is that is impoverished, but the reality is that one crisis, job loss, a loss of a car, a medical crisis, that can really happen to anyone. And this study is a little bit old, but I think in 2015, there was a study nationally that looked at who is really living in poverty. And the truth is that most Americans can't put away $400 a month. So if you're looking at most Americans not being able to come up with $400 in an emergency, then that means that pretty much anyone is our clientele. Anybody who faces a crisis could be served by our program. So thank you for asking.
No, and thank you guys for all of your efforts and for having this available for everybody in the community and for making it accessible, you know, for anybody out there who needs it. Because like you were saying, things happen. Things happen. Today you might be doing well, but then, you know, you might be struck with something completely outside of your, because I think that that's the myth that we have, right? That our bad choices, it's what lead us to be in poverty. And we don't understand that many times it's just circumstances that are completely outside of our choices, that it's stuff that we cannot control. And we end up in situations where we need that helping hand. And
there's no shame in it.
Thank you.
There's no shame in that.
Thank you.
Our programs have a dual focus. There's a crisis track, which I think is one of the things that helped us in being able to really respond to victims of the flood crisis, because we are well versed in helping those who are in crisis. And then simultaneously, there's a self-sufficiency track. And so the overall goal of our program is to take those families who are in crisis and look at the whole picture. I had said this earlier, but you might be here for food assistance, but what's going on with your energy bill? What's going on with your mortgage, with your rent? When you're looking at families who are in poverty, the most effective way to move them out of that state is to look at the big picture and to give them the assets and the resources that they need to get there. So for one example, we administer all of the Head Start programs in Howard County. It's a full day, full year educational program for children between the ages of 3 and 5. It's free to low-income Howard County residents. In that program, we serve a little more than 320 students every year. So why is that important when I stress the full day and the full year? Well, if you think about it, these individuals, the parents that may not have the resources to pay for quality education or quality care for their children, now have their kids in a program that are get them ready for kindergarten. But the fact that it's full day and full year also lets those families go to work, hold a job, pursue college education, all of those steps that are going to help them long-term earn more and keep their family in a place that's financially stable.
So we are getting close to our time here, but I would like to center back into those affected by the flood. Just, you know, remind everybody who's listening, even if you were not affected by the flood, Community Action Council is a great resource, a great place for you to go if you are in need of help. Honestly, I feel that you don't even need to be in a situation where you need help. If you're just trying to figure, you know, what's out there, I think that you guys are a great resource, a great place to come in and just find out what resources are available out there. Because you may be, like you were saying, you may be doing okay, right? But you could be maybe doing better by benefiting of one of the programs that you guys have to offer. So you're not alone, I guess is what we're trying to say here.
Absolutely. Thank you for saying that. You really are not alone. There are a lot of people that are in that boat and we are happy to help.
And so concentrating back on those who were specifically affected by the flood in Ellicott City, how can they continue to stay in touch with you? I know we talked about social media and I would like for you guys to remind them of that and the phone number and any other resources, any other places that you guys can point them to at this time.
So check out our website, certainly, which is cac-hc.org. And then again, our social media handles on Facebook and on Twitter really are really the best ways to connect with our organization for updated information as well. On our website, there's a spot to sign up for our newsletters where we're going to send out updates on our progress in helping flood victims. And so that's another way that they can stay in touch.
And if you need, like Jen was saying, if you need housing, if you need help with food, if you need, you know, if you're struggling to make ends meet, just contact the Community Action Council. We can give everybody the phone number one more time before we wrap our conversation up.
410-313-6185. And we can put you in touch with whatever department that you're looking for.
Fantastic. 410-313-6185. That's the number that you want to write down. It's almost like a lifeline. So thank you guys for coming in. If there's any closing thoughts, anything that you guys just want to put out there before we wrap it up?
I think we just want the opportunity to say thank you. The response from the community was really incredible. And we have many, many individuals and companies rather that support our programs year round. And the work that we do wouldn't be possible without that support. So thank you.
So thanks to everybody who's listening and thanks to everybody who has helped in any way. You know, there's no help that's too small. Every little bit helps because it all piles up and makes this huge difference. So again, thanks Jen. And thank you, Paul, for coming into my studio today.
Thank you for having us.
Opioids are highly addictive drugs, even when prescribed. If misused, they can lead to overdose and even death. One opioid overdose is too many. You have the power to save a life. If you or someone you know are misusing prescription opioids, such as oxycodone, or other forms of opioids like heroin or fentanyl, please call the Howard County Health Department for treatment options and opioid overdose response training at 410-313-6202 or visit the website at howardcountymd.gov/get-help.
Welcome back to Howard County Journal. Matt Trudell with you. And in studio today, I have Brian Jollis, who's here, and he is going to be talking to us about the free boot camp at Centennial Park that's on Saturdays?
Saturday mornings, yep.
Saturday mornings, all throughout the summer.
We're making it year-round now, but Centennial Park is through mid-November.
Okay. All right. So we will get into that. But first, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I started in the insurance and financial services industry about 30 years ago, Jollis Insurance and Financial. About, I don't know, 18, 20 years ago, I started realizing that we had a mission that exceeded what we did for a living, but more about our passion and helping people not only to handle their healthcare costs and, you know, some of their issues leading through their life, but also to help them to establish a healthy lifestyle and live their later years in good health too. So we focused on that within the agency, and then we decided to spin it off and actually created a nonprofit in 2008 called We Promote Health. It's a 501c3 nonprofit, fully separate from what we do, our other hat that we wear, and I go to great effort to keep those two things separate.
Yeah. What was the moment or what happened that made you decide you wanted to help people focus more on their health?
Well, it was really, I guess, three things. The first was my father died relatively young. He started having heart issues and significant issues, strokes, in his late 50s. And at early 60, 63, he passed away from complications from the heart. And what I realized was that pretty much all of that was within his control. Mm-hmm. So I realized everybody has, you have heredity and things can happen, but a large part of our health, going through life is within our control. So I started thinking about that. What can we do more to help people to focus on that? So that was the first thing. The second thing is I had a brother who also passed away young. His was sort of a fluky thing. He died of inoperable brain tumors. But I remember him at a very young age, maybe in his early to mid-20s, when I was still in high school, talked to me about all the things that he would do to give back and to make a difference. So I started thinking my dad never really had the opportunity. Well, my dad did in a fairly large way. My brother never really had the opportunity. He ended up dying young, long before he ever had the resources to really do that.
Yeah.
So I guess those two things in mind, I started thinking maybe I can do something and not wait till I go into retirement to start that sort of process. And then I also realized that my weight had crept up. I was over 200 pounds. I had started working out with a program called the Sergeant's Program out of Rockville. And that's a military-style boot camp, pretty intense. It was it was more about the intensity than anything, probably. It was 5 days a week, 5:30 in the morning, exactly what I wouldn't want the boot camp to be.
Yeah.
And sort of that was sort of the onus. And I started thinking, well, what if we made something that anyone could do? But I did that for a number of years. I think 6 or 8 years I did that pretty much 5 days a week, 5:30 a.m. even in the winter.
Wow.
Outside.
Wow.
So it was intense.
Yeah.
But having said that, I realized that with all the exercise, and even though I was in good enough shape to actually do a metric marathon with very little training at that time, so I was shocked at the shape that I got into.
Yeah.
But I didn't really lose much weight. So I realized it's also about the diet, and not so much dieting, but overall healthy lifestyle, and that made a big difference. So I said, it was putting these three things together. So I quickly did start watching what I ate. I started to realize that it's about community. Mm-hmm. This is all these things sort of play into why we created We Promote Health and what We Promote Health is. But I realized I really couldn't do it on my own. I started to realize that we could build a community, use the boot camp as a forum, and have it be something where it's not about the intensity, but about the effort. So that anyone at any fitness level, any age could do it, but bring in resources, other individuals that bring in their talent, so we can incorporate healthy eating, proper sleep, stress reduction, all those other elements that really...
Yeah.
And so we started to build the sort of the model for We Promote Health, with the boot camp being one of the main focuses.
Well, as someone who is... I've had a on and off again relationship with working out in my life. And I know at one point, but this was well before I even joined the gym at the time, was a lot of people, especially when they're thinking about jumping into working out, one, they don't know if it's worth the money. Am I going to get this and am I going to do it and then decide, all right, I want to keep this membership, or am I going to, throw my money down the drain? And then there's also the gym atmosphere, where there's some gyms you go to and it might be, especially if you're a bigger person, you might not want to be there because you see people lifting weights and they're all, almost perfect bodies. And you're like, I don't, So I think this, moving on to the boot camps, is a great thing because it sounds like, one, pretty much anybody of any level is invited out there.
Correct.
And it seems like you've built a community that is all for let's help everybody get to where they want to be. It's not I'm doing this better than you or whatever. And then also with it being free, you have people can come try it out without feeling like, oh, I have to spend this amount of money or whatever.
Yeah, so we've had people come just. They show up when they want.
Yeah.
So they register because we do have liability, so it's a free registration.
Yeah.
So they sign the disclaimer, but we make it clear from day one, hey, you're here. The most important thing is to have fun, to enjoy yourself. It's not about the intensity. It's about your effort. Many of the people can't do jumping jacks, and they might march in place and move their arms. We go for a walk, jog, run as part of the actual typical workout. Mm-hmm. For maybe 20 minutes, there might be a walk, jog, run piece of it every Saturday. Mm-hmm. But there are many that just walk. And some we try to encourage them, maybe some of them to maybe add a little bit of a jog for just a minute or 30 seconds and sort of add intermittent. But many, because of age, health issues, or just don't want to, they're not there really for that level of exercise.
Yeah.
So they'll just walk and they come back and they find for the hour, the most important thing is that they're moving the whole time.
Wow. So it's every Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
What time?
It's 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock.
Okay.
So it's 1 hour, and we're pretty punctual about start and finish. We usually finish with a core at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And a cool down and stretch. But 9 o'clock, you're out and off on your day.
Is there an age requirement?
No, we really encourage, if we look at the three markets, we encourage community in terms of, I always say basically bring your parents, bring your children, bring your neighbors, bring your coworkers, really anybody. But we have, occasionally, we're trying to get it to stick a little better. If we have more families showing up, I think when other families do show up, they'll see that it's sort of self-fulfilling. That once we have, we end up getting a few at a time.
Yeah.
But I think as we start to get a hold on that, we'll see more families. But we do have some to come. We have three generations. We have a couple of people that have been involved with the boot camp from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring their children who now are adults and married. And now one of them has had a baby about a year ago. They bring the grandchild. So,
wow.
So she comes. So all three generations, that's something they all do together. They don't live together. They're each in their own home, but they show up on Saturday mornings and they're part of the broader community, but they have their own sort of opportunity and family time that they built into this. I did want to add that one of the important elements, there's a woman in the community, Brenda von Rottenkrantz. She's a former Mrs. USA Congeniality. She mm-hmm. also has a local talk show here in Howard County. Called Fit to be Fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
She's a psychotherapist and a personal trainer. So she got kind of the whole package.
Yeah.
So that adds a lot of energy on Saturday morning. She's our, I always say head trainer, but she's our trainer.
So anybody that's still listening to this and is still on the fence about coming out, maybe they go, oh, it's been years since I've worked out, or, it's Saturday morning, I want to sleep in, this and the other. Why should they come out?
Okay. Well, you mentioned a couple things. You mentioned earlier in the conversation that when you go, some people go to a gym
mm-hmm.
and they get kind of intimidated. They might see somebody with a little more intensity. There's machines.
Mm-hmm.
There's people that seem to know what they're doing.
Yeah.
You have to start to think about, well, what am I going to be doing? Well, I'll do a couple reps here, and I guess I'll go get on the treadmill. And you're kind of running on your own on the treadmill. It's just there's a different sort of relationship. This is probably the majority of people, not the minority.
Mm-hmm.
So when they come out to the boot camp in the park, a couple things happen. First is there's no expectation. The only thing I ask is that they move the whole time they're there. Now, I'm not going to get on them, neither will the trainer, Brenda, about not moving. If they want to take a break, they take a break. But while Brenda's talking about very peppy at 8 o'clock in the morning because she's a former Mrs. USA Congeniality, and she's talking about something about your diet or we got to not be focus on things that are not stressful or add more sleep or whatever, I notice people are standing and listening, and I'll say, hey, we're moving for the hour, so how about we march in place? So some people march in place while they're talking, but they're moving.
Yeah.
And that's really the only real expectation is that people sort of come out there with that in mind. So number one is community. So when they come out, it's enjoyable and fun because, Brenda makes it fun. They're going to not have to think about what they're doing. When they show up, they're going to be, there's six stations set up. There's a, I'm spending some time, the week before sort of setting up the plan for for that Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And when they show up, it's all set up. There are six stations usually on the basketball court. We're using the corporate pavilion, maybe the benches within the pavilion or the back steps. We're using the parking lot, for walking or jogging. And we're using the running pathway. We'll put out signs in terms of where they might turn, or we usually have them do up and back. So there'll be a sign somewhere on the pathway that says turn around. So everyone, when we do walking and jogging and running, they're all running or jogging or walking for the same amount of time, but they're going different distances.
Mm-hmm.
So if we start out, it's all about finishing and starting together.
Yeah.
We go for the walk, jog, run. Again, back to the community aspect and the fact that it is all abilities, and people don't have to feel like they have to run or they'll lose the group.
Yeah.
The group comes back to them, and then goes back again, and it's sort of a the way we've designed this whole program. So they come out and they don't have to think about what they do. They come out and they get the idea of this is a community that they're part of. They get the boulder in their week. This is one of my sort of larger issues that I think really that are part of the culture of this. If you can give them one thing that they can grab onto a week where they say, okay, I do this on Saturday mornings, then what else can they add? Well, now if they have a walking group with some friends, they can add that. If they have a spin class, maybe they do belong to a gym and they go to their spin class, they've added that.
Yeah.
So there's different elements to build around it, but they got that one boulder in their week.
Just a couple more questions because we're running out of time. One is, you said when it gets cold, you move to another location. Does that stay on Saturdays from 8 to 9?
Yeah, it's the same time. And we were fortunate enough to have the Church at Covenant Park,
okay,
which is off of Centennial Lane, back by SAC, Soccer Association mm-hmm. of Columbia Fields. Back in there, they're directly across from the SAC office is the church. They've donated their inside space on Saturday morning. So we go in there mid-November, right on through mid-March.
Okay.
Every Saturday morning, unless there's ice or they close the park,
mm-hmm.
We're in there. And again, still free, still the same group, and we can accommodate probably 60, 70 people in that space. So we're hoping we get it. I also wanted just to quickly add, we've added two more opportunities. We're just starting to grow them.
Okay.
But Tuesday and Thursday nights.
Okay.
So Thursday night, we do a walk-jog-run. We usually pick a 5K run that's people will either decide they don't necessarily have to commit to them, but we like them to have sort of a target run.
Yeah.
So they show up at the park. This is off of Centennial Lane entrance. The Centennial Lane entrance, go to the back of the park, you'll see the We Promote Health sign, and that's on Thursday nights. So actually, Thursday nights.
Yep.
And that's from 6 to 7. We might change the time when it starts getting darker earlier, but we're going to try to run that as long as it's warm enough outside. We'll continue to do that as much of the year as we can.
Yeah.
And we do Centennial Park, same concept. It's some people just walk it. We'd like them to sort of put a little more emphasis, and we're hoping that many will use it as an opportunity to sort of begin to train for their first 5K, whether they're going to run it or jog walk it or whatever they decide to do. But it gives them that ability to join a community and know that they can start it anywhere and be able to do it.
Okay.
So that's one. And then we have a walking. And that's called actually Couch to 5K on Thursday nights. Let me correct that.
Nice.
We call it Couch to 5K. And then on Tuesday nights in Dorsey Hall Professional Park. And it's on our website, the directions. But we put a sign there. We promote health. People gather there. And we set up different walks. But it's walk, jog, run. So some will run it, some will jog it, some will walk it. The signs are directional signs. Most cases, it's an up and back. We finish right where we started. 1 hour opportunity with community, people from the community, all ages, all fitness levels. So that's Tuesday and Thursday nights for that.
Wow.
So we've got quite a bit that we're building towards, but the most exciting, I left this for last, is Dr. Jeff Goldstein. I hope I said his name right. I've known Dr. Jeff now for a year, and my mind just kind of went blank on that. But Dr. Jeff is a Zumba instructor. He actually works for NASA.
Wow.
He's a scientist, but he does this for fun.
Yeah.
He shares our the spirit of our initiative fully. We just made him a member of our board, but in partnership with the church. The Church of Covenant Park, he holds a Zumba on Monday nights, and that's year round. He's got 120 or 130 individuals that attend the two back to back sessions on Monday nights.
Wow!
At Covenant Park, there's a waiting list now, but we've been collecting those names, and as people don't come, we try to fill in so he maximizes takes advantage of the space. And we're going to start quarterly with Dr. Jeff. He's coordinating Zoomathons. And
wow.
There's one Saturday, July 7th, I think, or 8th, whatever that Saturday is. That is a 2.5 hour opportunity with three instructors, free. And we're thinking maybe quarterly there'll be these Zoomathons.
All right. And last but not least, you said people have to register. So where do they get more information, and how do they register?
So if they go to www.wepromotehealth.org, so that's wepromotehealth.org, they'll see a drop-down for community programs. They'll click on either Couch to 5K or a Walk, Jog, Run or the Boot Camp in the Park, and any one of those, they'll direct them to a registration online registration form. When they show up, they'll sign one more a disclaimer.
Okay.
But online, it notifies me that they're coming, and we can make accommodations for the larger attendance.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining me today. This has been fascinating. I've learned a lot. There's a lot of stuff that you guys do that can pretty much fill up everybody's week and get all their fitness in for the week. So thank you very much. This has been Brian Jalas representing We Promote Health and the free boot camp in the park, which is now a year round, not only in the park. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much for having us.
We'll be back on Howard County Journal.
I'm so excited for this concert.
Me too. Could you put the directions in my phone?
Hold on, man. I'm trying to put this on Snap.
Okay, I guess I'll do it myself. I'm getting so many texts.
Oh my gosh, watch out!
Approximately 27,000 people are injured or killed annually as a result of distracted driving crashes. It can wait. For more information about distracted driving, visit www.teenhealthmatters.org.
For HOCO Journal, I'm Alex Baker. Mary's Land Farm uses the latest and greatest best practices in the ethical and responsible treatment of the farm, animals, and employees. They also provide tours, field trips, and birthday parties. With me here today to talk about Mary's Land Farm is one of the owners, Tom Cunningham. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So first question we'll just start off with is just give us maybe a brief overview and description of what Mary's Land Farm is.
So Mary's Land Farm is based on a permaculture method of farming, which means that we plant once. We're not a soybean and corn rotating farm. We've put in 8,000 fruit and nut trees on a system of swales and berms, and we graze between the swales and berms, and that way we have natural fertilizer and we also capture the water on the farm. So Mary's Land Farm is a farm that's striving to go beyond organic, and it's a grazing farm. So it's beef, lamb, chicken, and chicken eggs and duck eggs.
And so what inspired you to become a farmer instead of just create Mary's Land Farm?
So the reason we started Mary's Land Farm was we were looking for better food for our own children. We were stuck in the situation where we have seven children, and some of our children were having different health problems, including problems with things like attention deficit disorder. And we started learning more and more how food affects your behavior and how food affects your health. At the same time, it was hard to necessarily understand the labeling on a lot of food products, even organic food products. And people told us that you really had to start with a local farmer, because if you have a local farmer, you can talk to him about what's in his food products versus having to trust organic labeling from Kazakhstan. You could go to your farmer in your local market, and realizing there weren't a lot of farmers in the local market who we could get the chicken and the beef products that we wanted, we thought, well, this will be an opportunity for us to grow food for ourselves that we could also sell to the community.
It's interesting you're talking about other kind of some local farmers. Is there any other like local farms around Howard County that you keep in contact or kind of collaborate with in any way?
So we stay in contact with all of the farms in Howard County, and they all they do a great job of providing food for the entire economy. The people growing the soybean and the corn. Also, there's a lot of vegetable farmers in Howard County, people might not realize. There's a lot of people grazing cattle in Howard County. I'm sure people see the cattle that the farms are grazing in Howard County. So we keep in touch with everybody. They're helping feed a mass market of people. Our farm is unique. We are serving a crowd that wants organic food, food that's soy-free, because a lot of people have issues with soy allergies, and also what we call nutrient-dense food, because the food that we're growing is nutrient dense because it has a natural diet. Their beef is 100% grass-fed, and the lambs are 100% grass-fed. The chickens get an organic feed mix. The pigs get an organic feed mix. So this is why we provide organic, nutrient-dense food that not another farm in Howard County, I believe, is doing right now.
So you've been talking a little bit about them already, but tell us about all of the animals that you have at the farm.
The animals on the farm are beef cattle. So we have both beef cattle that are there because they produce offspring. We call them brood cows. And then we have beef steer, which are going out to be processed after they're about a year and a half old. Then we have pigs that are out in the woods. That's what we call our woodland-raised pork. So there's a book called Pigtails that really scandalizes you about contemporary pig production. And one alternative he mentions in this book is raising pigs out on pasture, which is what we do. So the pigs have as natural a habitat as they could out on our farm. Then we have lamb. Lamb are great grazers, and the lamb are outside year-round. They're called Katahdin sheep. We chose the Katahdin breed because they don't need a lot of dewormers and other medicines that a lot of sheep need. We have ducks. We have a large population of Asians in Howard County, as you know. And the Chinese absolutely love duck eggs. So I love ducks personally. I didn't know exactly what to do with them. I talked to a lot of Koreans about the fact that we had duck eggs, and they said, "We think you want to talk to the Chinese." So once I found the Chinese, I learned that it's the Chinese people that really like duck eggs. So we sell duck eggs. And then we have 750 layer hens. So our hens are the same way. They have an organic soy-free diet. The eggs are very fresh. So we sell eggs at our farm store. They're usually a day or two old. And then we also sell eggs at the Roots markets. There's a Roots market on 108 and one on 97 in Olney.
So imagine with just all those list of animals that you told me, imagine that must be a lot of just a day in the life of running that farm. There just must be a lot of steps in making sure all the animals are okay and well-fed and everything.
It's so I previously was in IT, and in IT, everything's mission critical. It's 24/7. But there's usually good money in the IT field. Farming still has the 24/7 component. It's a harder way to make a dollar, but you're pretty much at work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because you never know. Just last night, we had a cow that was having her calf, and she needed assistance pulling the calf.
Oh, wow.
So there you are. Sunday night, all of a sudden, Sunday night, you're pulling a calf out. We have predators, right? We have our ducks and our chickens are out on pasture, and you never know when a fox or a hawk is hungry and he's eyeing your birds. As far as a daily chore routine, water is probably the most critical thing in a farm. When it gets hot in July and August, if chickens are without water for a couple hours, all of a sudden they're just keeling over. Sheep, cows, pigs, they all need water. Ample supply of water is probably the most important thing. And as well as their feed mix. You know, we give them their feed so they keep growing and they produce what we need them to produce. But the chores mostly involve getting out, making sure everything is watered and fed. In the case of the cows and the sheep, we're moving them every day or two. We use a system called managed intensive grazing, where if you go back, you know, for thousands of years, maybe a million years, there were giant herds of buffalo that roamed this country. And even the bird populations, there, if you read fiction from the 1850s, they'll talk about flocks of birds that take all day to fly over a farm because there's just that many birds migrating.
Wow.
So we've lost a lot of nature. But what that flock of birds would do, or that herd of buffalo, is they would come into a couple acres and they would eat that acreage down. They would leave a ton of manure, and then they would leave for months. And that soil would just be left to digest the manure that was left. The plant life would have to rebuild. But there was this constant cycle around the world of destruction and rebuilding. So on our farm, we try to simulate that with the cows and the sheep in this system. The system is becoming very popular. It's called managed intent. The system is very popular now. It's called managed intensive grazing, or MIG. And so we'll put 20 cows on an acre for a day. They'll eat that acre down. They'll leave lots of manure. And then they won't come back to that acre for months. You know, depending on the time of year, it could be 6 months, it could be 2 months. But this actually, what they found is when you do this type of grazing, the grass grows better.
Wow.
So you have a deeper root system. And because of the deeper root system, the grass then grows quicker and more robustly.
Oh, you've been talking a lot about just, you know, once again, stuff I've never even heard of. I wouldn't have even thought about all the, you know, farming techniques, like you say, keeping moving the animals. So what do you, if when it comes to the public, what would you say is like the public's biggest misconception about farms or people who work on farms?
I think people don't realize that starting after World War II, there was a bit of a panic that with global population increase, there was not going to be enough food. So the USDA started visiting farms. And most farmers really became convinced that they had a ministry in that they had to produce farm to feed a growing public. So farmers are very concerned about the food that they produce. And they're very apprehensive about not being successful because the margins are so thin in farming that if you end up with a failure of, you know, if 20 cows die for some reason because they didn't get water, or a crop fails because you didn't follow the instructions as the seed vendor told you to, all of a sudden you're not producing the food that you intended to. And like in IT, you know, let's say we'd release software and the software had a bug in it. We'd apologize. And then in a day, we'd have the bug fixed. We'd re-release the code and everybody, oh, okay, well, you know, sorry you screwed up. This was an inconvenience for us. We're glad you fixed the problem in a day. So some of the farm problems take a year to fix because you have dead animals now or a failed crop. So farmers are extremely conscientious, really working for the public good. You know, as much as 9/11 responders, all these other people that do great things working for the public good, farmers are the same way.
Yeah, and actually my grandfather was a soybean farmer for many years. And like you said, with that thing, like I can connect because a lot of times, you know, he would always make sure everything's right because sometimes the crops didn't work out, even if it was just out of his control, like it was just a dry spell, you know, not a lot of rain. Just you always got to make sure. Otherwise, you lose the whole thing.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very mission critical. It's a mission critical job.
And, you know, looking at some of your stuff on your website, you offer a lot of numerous tours for the farm. So you got a lot of different ones. So why don't you just tell me all about the individual tours you got?
Okay. So on Saturdays, we have a walk-in tour, which is just for people who want to come and get to know our farm, understand the basics of the environmental practices we're using and why they're healthy for the environment and healthy for people. That's at 10 o'clock on Saturday mornings. Then we have a tour in the afternoon that is a more in-depth tour explaining the whole permaculture system. And that's for people that really want to understand more in depth how permaculture works. And that tour is by reservation. And then there's another tour midday that is explaining how water works on the farm. It's really fascinating. On our farm, we have a ice hole, which is a 12-foot deep hole. And our farm in the 1850s was a dairy farm. And of course, there was no electricity. There was no refrigeration. So they would store ice year round in this 12-foot deep hole. They would put a layer of ice in the winter, and then they put sawdust and ice and sawdust and ice and sawdust. And then the farmer each morning, he would take his fresh milk, And then he would take ice out of the ice hole, and he would deliver ice and milk.
Wow.
So we have a tour explaining how water comes onto the farm, because it comes out of springs on the farm, and how water works. You know, it's fascinating. In Howard County, almost everybody's on a well, and they've got this 6-inch pipe standing out in their backyard, and they know it's their well, but they don't understand exactly how it's got water in it or how you could extract water from it. So we give this tour about explaining how water works, how ice was gathered on the farm. We show people the ice hole and let them drink some of our spring water.
All right. And then, you know, not only you have that, but you also offer a lot of field trips. So tell us about some of the field trips that you offer for students, or was it students around Howard County?
Yes. So we get students from mostly Howard County, but we also get students from New Jersey down to Virginia.
Oh, wow.
Permaculture actually is now in some of their curriculums. So they study permaculture in school and they want to come. Or they'll have a unit in their curriculum about water conservation, the cycle of water. And we love connecting what kids are learning in the textbooks right there on the farm. You know, there's this huge emphasis on science, technology, and math right now, the STEM curriculum. And we want kids to come to our farm and see how STEM applies to the farm life. And not only that, it's interesting. We've had colleges, University of Maryland, and a couple of different local schools with ideas for projects. And they come and they propose projects to us, and we have this dialogue about whether or not even drone projects. There's one school right now that's talking to us about doing manure sampling by drone.
Interesting, really.
Because it's actually kind of challenging to get out there behind all those cows and get manure samples. And they've got this idea where the drone can actually go and sample.
Wow, I'd be really interested to see that.
Actually. Yeah, I thought it was a crappy idea.
Ah, I see what you did there. And, you know, not only did that, but I was looking at your website. If there are people listening right now who want to be a part of the farm, you also not only offer job opportunities. You know, I noticed a number of them available on the website.
Yes. So we always need people to help us in our store. We have a store right on the farm. We're also opening a new store up on Old Frederick Road. And additionally, we're always we have projects on the farm, building projects. So we need carpenters, we need people to help us maintain vehicles. We have summer employment opportunities, but mostly right now we're looking at the fall. We need a lot of young people, young and old, to help us guide field trips and farm tours and take people on hay rides and do all those sorts of things.
Okay. So winding down my questions here, I have to ask you, if you could narrow it down to one thing, what do you enjoy most about Mary's Land Farm?
I enjoy being forced into nature. This morning it was nippy. I didn't want to go out 6 o'clock in the morning. You get out there and you're like, oh my God, this is beautiful. If I wasn't forced to do it, I would never be outside on a regular basis at 6 o'clock in the morning. The great thing about a farm is it just pushes you.
All right, then. So the last question I'll have for you is, tell us where listeners can go to learn more about Mary's Land Farm.
To learn more about Mary's Land Farm, our website is www.mary.farm, which is F-A-R-M, no com, net, or org, it's .farm. So www.mary.farm.
Okay. Located right here in Howard County, Mary's Land Farm not only offers organic products, but they also use the latest and greatest best practices in the ethical and responsible treatment of the farm. I have been talking today with one of the owners of Mary's Land Farm, Tom Cunningham, to go into more detail about everything they do. Tom, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
And that's it for our show today. Thanks to Matt, Alex, and all our guests this month for lending a helping hand to those in need, for helping us live healthier lifestyles, and for producing nutritious food for all of us. We appreciate you and thank you for listening to our show. Don't forget to connect with us on social media, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are Dragon Digital Radio. You should also subscribe to our podcast page at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com and share our content with your friends and family. You can contact me later and say thank you for that. If you'd like to be a part of our show or you have comments and ideas, contact me at moviedo@howardcc.edu. That's M-O-V-I-E-D-O at howardcc.edu. Or you can find me on Facebook under Chris Oviedo. Howard County is truly a great place. Let's all do our part in keeping it that way. Until next month, I am Chris Oviedo.